Welcome to Happy Hour with lawyer and TV personality Jonna Spilbor and author and inspirational speaker Carol Pesci. Happy Hour comes your way every Sunday morning at this time with life advice, real conversations, and awesome interviews with self-help heavy hitters, best-selling authors, celebrities, and more. Would you like to maybe live better, stress less, and laugh more? Then you've come to the right place.
The following is a paid program, and the views expressed do not necessarily represent the opinions of the management of this station or Hamel Broadcasting. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Happy Hour. Here it's John Spilbor. It is Carol Pesci. It is myself. Some call me Frankenberry, which works because that's my name. And we've got another show for you here today, and we are going to be interviewing a guy. Now, his basic concept is something I think you all, our audience, our listening audience, all seven of you, can relate to, and that is how to suck less.
I know this cracks us up, but yes, we are going to be speaking with the author of a book entitled Suck Less, Do Better. And our guest is Nate Green. He's a CEO, keynote speaker, entrepreneur, coach, and the best-selling author of said book. And listen, who doesn't want to suck less and or do better? Makes sense to me.
Hey, I'm in.
Yeah, to everybody, I'm sure. I've been feeling that way since, God, the late 70s.
Midway through the book, he's got a real interesting way that he refers to how we, quote unquote, suck and how we can suck less. So we'll save that for him since he's the man. He has an interesting story, too. So we'll be speaking with Nate Green in just a little while.
Cool.
Okay. All right. Fantastic. So now we did. Now it's an interview that hasn't aired yet, but we did talk to somebody the other day that will be for a future show. Now, apparently, though, this person we talked to, Jonna, they just wanted updates on the cats. You know, she's been listening to the show to get prepared for that interview that we did. And yeah. She completely lost track of what the reason she was there for was, you know.
She was more curious about a cat update.
Exactly. We were supposed to, you know, interview her about her book. And all she wanted to know was what's going on with the cats.
And I mean, not for nothing. She was confusing the names of the cats. She was all worried about Juno when she was supposed to be worried about Frenchie. I had to get all that straightened out. And I didn't have the heart to tell her what I'm about to tell you guys because I didn't want to send her into a tizzy and add a few more cats to the mix.
Oh, no.
But, well, wait. Not mine. Okay, so here's what happened.
Again, oh boy. pulling up a comfy chair.
So, and the pillow.
Yes, I'll clutch the pillow eventually.
This is just a little bit of a, I guess this is like a little sidebar to my own little cat drama. And that is, okay, so you guys know, because a lot of people know, and if you listen to the show, or if you listen to me, because I complain about it an awful lot, you know that there's a feral cat colony in my neighborhood. I refer to them as the dirt cats. I have rescued all told so far, well, excluding what I'm going to tell you today, not including what I'm going to tell you today, I've rescued a total of 9. There are, in my little colony that comes that I feed every day, a couple meals a day, there's another 5 that are on
my gosh.
I know, which is why, you know, look, I'm trying to keep up. I feel like, you know, the episode of I Love Lucy, when Lucy and Ethel are in the candy factory and there's candy, they're wrapping candy on a conveyor belt, and all of a sudden the conveyor belt just speeds up. And so Lucy's like shoving them in her bra, shoving them in her mouth. Well, that's me.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, oh, no, it was the Honeymooners. Well, Ralph goes to get a dog from the pound and comes back with like 6 of them.
Oh, I don't remember that episode. Yeah. That does sound fitting as well. So, okay. In other words, I've already rescued 9 total. I've got 5 more that are on my to-do list. Hopefully, believe it or not, by the time this show airs, but I know that's wishful thinking. But okay, now that aside, and because I do post my dirt cat foibles on Facebook an awful lot and other places, somehow word has gotten out in the hood that I'm the go-to. If you have a dirt cat question, if you have a dirt cat situation, if you've got a dirt cat thing that's just, you know, aching at you, I'm the person to contact about it.
Well, you are an expert at this point.
Yes.
Now I am. Yeah, now I am. Okay. So what has been happening over the last couple of months is that a neighbor has reached out to me because as it happens, you guys might recall the cat that started this all was a cat that showed up like going on 2 years ago now, who I called Punky. And Punky was pumping out kittens like it was her job. Like, you know, it takes 60 days for to gestate when you're a cat. So she'd have a litter. She'd take like a week off and then she'd be like, hey, who's next? And then boom, 2 months after that, she'd have another litter. Take a week off. Hey, who's next? Boom. So that's how this kept happening. Well, Punky disappeared from my life a few months ago. And I was at first concerned because I'm like, oh, gosh, I hope nothing happened to Punky, even though she's the bane of my existence. And as it happened, one thing led to another, and a neighbor and I were kibitzing, and it turns out Punky moved to a neighbor's house, and this neighbor has been feeding her, okay? And I know this for sure because I needed proof of life. I had the neighbor take a picture and send it to me so that I could verify that Punky had moved.
Now, the question is, though, did the neighbor hold up a newspaper behind Punky when they took the picture?
No, no. Okay. And I probably should have asked for that.
Just but yeah, I didn't. You should have.
So now, okay, so she sends proof of life. Punky has moved on to greener pastures. All right. Now,
which makes me laugh, by the way, because even Punky has said, oh, I am done with these cats.
I know
this is my gig. I know that I brought this on, but I'm done.
Or she's done with the woman who keeps stealing her babies.
Maybe that's it.
That's a good point, yeah.
And I should feel relief, right? Like, phew, Punky's moved on to her next victim. I don't have to do this anymore. But a part of me was like, you little turncoat. The amount of food and attention I have given you over the last 2 years, and this is how you thank me and all the money I've spent on your offspring. And but that, I got over that. So, okay. So now fast forward a little bit, because this neighbor who now knows that Punky moved into her yard and she's feeding Punky, and I'm grateful for that, also has a neighbor. And that neighbor has been feeding a couple of kittens. So I said to myself, I said, self, what kittens does she got that I missed? Right? Because, I mean, think about it, you guys. If I got nine that I've rescued and five more that I got to rescue, how did I miss a couple? You know?
Well, when you get to 14, I guess it's easy to miss a couple extras.
Oh, my gosh.
So the neighbor's neighbor says to me, I've been feeding these couple of cats. I know one is the mother and one is a kitten, and I've been trying to catch them both because we really got to catch the mama. And I heard from the other neighbor that you can help me with this. Ooh. And so now I'm thinking, I'm like, oh, wow, I got a neighbor's neighbor that's going to try to catch Punky and put an end to all this madness. And I get very, very excited, very excited. So I jump in with, you know, both feet. And I'm like, yes, yes, I can help you. What do you need? She's like, well, okay, I'm going to catch either both of them or at least one of them, but I can't get them to the vet. If I catch them, can you get them to the vet? And I make an appointment at the vet and I'm all in. I'm like, yes, I got this. I got you. This is good. Teamwork makes the dream work. I'm very excited. So as luck would have it, we kind of plan when she's going to catch one or both of these cats that she's been taking care of now for, I think, a couple of months, more than that. And I make the appointment at the vet and we're all ready. And sure enough, she contacts me at night and she's like, I got the kitten. I got it. Great. So I get up early on a Monday morning and I go to her house. I've really never met her before. And I grab this kitten in the crate and I go off to the vet and blah, 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 blah. And I get the cat to the vet and they're going to take care of it, shots and check up and spay or neuter. We weren't sure whether it was a male or a female. But of course it would cost less if it were a male. So it turned out to be a female, which is fine because the neighbor already named it Sparkles. And when I brought the cat in to the vet, I'm like, well, the neighbor, you know, the cat's name is Sparkles. We don't know if it's a boy or a girl. And the vet looked at me and I'm like, well, I do believe it has a sibling named Jazz Hand. So it's all good. Yeah,
I was just going to say, is the neighbor 12?
No. So now I'm invested in this. I really feel, you guys, like I'm on this rescue mission. Like I feel like I'm giving back to my community and I'm jumping and I'm doing all. And mind you, sidebar, and it ain't like I got nothing else to do, if you know what I'm saying. I mean, I got a few other things on my plate, but I really want to clean up the neighborhood and solve this problem, because it is a problem. And I worry too that these little cats, they're going to get eaten, they're going to get run out. Like, I worry about that, even though this one wasn't mine apparently, and I didn't know who it was.
I can't believe after all this time that Punky is this elusive.
I know, for months now, for I think
years.
She's cheated death, right? How is she doing it? I mean, if that's not a testament to how resilient dirt cats are, and the father too, Pinky, right? So I mean, you know, so but now I'm thinking that, you know, Punky is this little kitten's mother, and I'm doing my part to stop the madness and end the cycle. So I race down there and I do that and I take care of the bill, and then I gotta go. I know I'm gonna have to go later and pick it up, but I feel good. I feel good. So the day goes on and I'm waiting and waiting. And of course I was waiting to find out if it was a boy or a girl, because it was named Sparkles. And I thought, and I did find out that it was a girl. And I finally go to pick up this little kitten at the end of the day. And I had to wait at the vet now for about an hour because the kitten wasn't ready, which is fine. And while I'm waiting, I text my neighbor's neighbor who's going to take ownership of Sparkles. And I say, oh, by the way, do you have a picture, you know, of the mama cat? Because I figure, right, it's going to be Punky, right? Punky's now the neighbor and, you know, had another litter that I didn't know about. And she goes, oh, yeah. And she sends me a picture of the mama cat. And the mama cat ain't Punky. So now I'm sitting there and
you got a new problem.
I'm sitting there and I go, oh my God, this is like something out of Maury Povich. You are not the mama cat. So I'm sitting here helping the neighborhood with a cat that I feel like I'm somehow responsible for. And it's a whole different colony going on.
Oh, like, no.
Mama cat, is the mama cat, is this mama cat another offspring of Punky that I somehow missed, even though I've got 14 of her cats either in my possession or on my deck? Or is there more? And we just did, like, now it's like, poof, my head is exploding. So I don't know. I don't know. But a part of me felt like, you know, on the one hand, like I said, this is if Maury Povich had an animal version, then I thought, can we make a reality show out of this? You are not the mama. And if so, like, is there another male cat that's going around? Was I dumb to think that there was just one female cat and one male cat giving birth to all these cats? I mean, to my credit, I did witness like 3 or 4 litters on my own. I guess a couple could have escaped.
Oh my gosh. So is this woman going to keep Sparkles?
She's keeping Sparkles. And that was part of the deal. Like, I'm like, I'm going to do this. You got to keep her. Because I know that they say there's a whole trap, neuter, release thing. And we all understand that. But, and I get it. As a last resort, I get that. But I don't know. I just don't like these cats being outside. It's not like they're rabbits or deer or raccoon that, you know, they're cats.
Right. And it's cold. Now, is this neighbor's neighbor planning on catching the mama cat as well?
So that's the plan. So now we've got to catch not only this mama cat, but we got to catch the OG. We still have to catch Punky. That's why I was so excited. I thought, oh, my God, we're going to get a 2-for-1. We're going to get Punky and we're going to get an offspring of Punky. And that's going to be like that. But now I know that a couple of kittens slipped through the cracks. It's never going to end. It's never going to end.
Not without that mother. Well, and now a new mama.
and now a new mama.
Jonna, I cannot, and you're probably not even going to tell us, I cannot imagine how much money you have spent in the last, what, year and a half, 2 years?
Year and a half. I don't even want to think about it.
Yeah, I don't either. There's like small countries out there that are envious of what you've spent on these pets.
I know. And it's funny because when I was sitting in that vet's office waiting, there was a little sign, a little tiny sign behind a plant that said, you know, we do low cost spay and neuter. And I'm, you know, looking down the list of reasons why they would do it. And I'm like, wait a minute. I told them that this is a neighborhood cat. I told them that it was a feral. I told them all of that. But based on what I paid, I didn't get no discount.
You should get a volume discount for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't get a discount. And then when I show back up, so they originally charged me for a mail and it was X amount of dollars. And when I showed back up, they're like, yeah, we need another $25. I'm like, why? Because Sparkles is a girl. Like, here. I'm like, here. Wait a minute. Here. Let me. You got a sharp object. Let me just slit my wrist. Let me just bleed a little bit more while I get my wallet out. All it's right, okay. Now- no. It's okay. I'm not being dramatic.
No, never. Never. Exactly. But, you know, John, at least be happy with the fact that for the 50-50 shot that the neighbor's neighbor took, they got the name right. Because, you know, if I'm a dude cat and I somehow end up back in the neighborhood, I'm in some deep crap if my name is Sparkles. You know, so at least she got it right that it is a female cat.
But she thought it was a male and named it Sparkles. And
okay, now that's a totally different issue, and you might want to just, you know, back off from this neighbor.
I'm not going to talk, you guys, because every single time I named a dirt cat, believing it to be one sex, every single time I had it wrong. So I have a lot of female cats with boy names and vice versa.
Elvis.
Elvis, that's a girl. Prada, boy. Jimmy, girl.
See, that's why you just need, what you need at this particular point, John, is you just need a master list of generic coverall names. Okay, so like.
You should just start numbering them.
Yeah, you can do that.
Dirt cat number 3, dirt cat number 18.
That's right. DC 12, yes.
But do you think I should pitch the show? Do you think I should pitch the animal version of Maury Povich to some network? Right? I mean, I think there's something there. When you watch the Maury Povich reruns, when he's like, oh, you are not the father, when they do all the paternity tests, can you imagine doing that with dirt cats? I mean, that's crazy.
Well, you'd be good at narrating it.
Yeah, you would. You would.
I absolutely would. Now, can I tell you something gross? That this is really
sure,
gross.
Why not?
A little bit related, but unrelated. Oh, God, it's so gross. I'm getting nauseous just thinking about it. So while all this...
So wait a minute. Just pause for a second. Frankly, I can't even imagine what it is. Because if it's really gross, we know there's certain things that are gross that can't be because she wouldn't talk about it.
Right, so, exactly, exactly. So this is like far and above the usual genre gross. I know.
Yeah, what's going to happen here? Okay, go.
Some serious anticipation.
So while all this capturing and neutering and spaying and all that was going on, we had some very cold weather last week. We actually also had some weird kind of freezing rain. And as a result of that, my entire deck, it was really just a frozen pond because all the snow that had fallen got covered over with ice. So it's all ice. And that's really hard on the outside dirt cats because they can't get traction. It's hard for them to walk, et cetera. So, you know, I had an issue there. Well, I wake up one morning early and it's dark because I get up before the birds. And I open my sliding glass door because they're usually going to come right around the time I get up so I could feed them. And I look outside and I see bloody footprints.
Oh, God.
All over the ice.
Oh.
Bloody footprints. And there were a couple of spots where the ice, I had cleared some ice. So there was a couple bloody footprints on the actual deck. There was bloody footprints where I normally put their food.
Uh-oh.
And I look and I'm like, oh God, what could this be? And I look closely at one of the bloody footprints and I said, that's not a cat. That's not a cat footprint. And I'm an expert now. So I roll the videotape. Sure enough, at like 2 o'clock in the morning. And here's the mystery. A raccoon comes up on my deck. And from the camera, I can't, like, it didn't come up the steps. It must have come from a tree, came from the roof. It came from some other weird ninja raccoon way. And must have cut its foot getting on the deck.
Left,
like, one little foot left these bloody, this little bloody footprint wherever it went. And then the bloody footprints stopped. So now I'm like, but it wasn't, you know, listen, I think I posted a picture. There was a raccoon one time that, you know, practically decapitated itself and was like, you got any food? Like, didn't care. I had to shake around. So a little foot injury didn't really bother it. But now I'm like, I got these little bloody icicle footprints on my deck. I don't want the cats going anywhere near them. But I did a whole lot of research because I think it's actually a good thing that they were almost immediately frozen because nothing would live in that blood. But now I still got it, the ice is still there. I still have a situation now. I've got to clean up an aisle 9 situation on my deck from this bloody raccoon paw. Like, who would think? What are the chances? What are the chances that that could happen? Pretty good.
That's because a couple of them posted signs out around your yard that says, go here, it sucks less.
Oh, they said, they posted signs that say, you know what, this place sucks less. And if you can't do better, you just can't do better.
Frankenberry,
what do you think?
I don't know. Is there another sign with an arrow that says, please start the next segment before Frankenberry loses his mind?
That was an okay Sagu.
I know.
So, all right. So with that, with my tales of woe, we are going to speak about how we can all suck less and do better when we come back from the break, because we're going to be speaking with author, CEO, keynote speaker, entrepreneur, and coach Nate Green, who incidentally wrote a book called Suck Less, Do Better, when we come back.
All right, that sounds good. And Jonna, after all of that, I just want to say kudos from me and the cat community for keeping them as safe as you possibly can and keeping them on the straight and narrow. You know, none of those cats are smoking. None of those cats are hanging out with the wrong crowd. Mm-hmm. None of those cats are possibly going down the wrong path. You're doing a good job. Thanks, Mom. We'll be right back.
Sunday mornings with 92.9 WBPM means you'll laugh more and stress less. Now here's more Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And welcome back again, everyone, to Happy Hour. You've got John Spillmore, you've got Carol Pesci, you've got this fella here, and also you've got our guest here in segment number 2. And Jonna, Carol, we are going to be talking to Nate Green, something about sucking less. And I'm all good with that, so I'm interested to hear what he has to say.
Yes, we are all excited today to bring you our guest, Nate Green, who I want to tell you a little bit about, because Nate is an award-winning CEO, entrepreneur, best-selling author, keynote speaker, and leadership performance coach, renowned for his relentless spirit and dedication to developing leaders and teams. And wait for this, you guys. His success is reflected in his consistent recognition on the Inc. 5000 list, where he's been from 2021 to 2024, and the successful, not 6, not 7, but 8-figure exit of one of his companies.
Nice.
We like 8-figure exits, don't we? But today we're going to talk about Nate's very first book. And I love this title, Suck Less, Do Better. And we're also going to touch on some of his other programs like Built Unstoppable and Focus Your Greatest Asset. Nate Green, you are very good at titling books and I'm sure many other things. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
All right. So Suck Less, Do Better. First of all, before you even tell us how the book came about, because you have a very interesting story, like you have a very interesting story. I'll let you tell it. How long did it take you to come up with that title? I just got to know.
So the title, to be honest with you, came from a constant statement that I've told myself for the last about 15 years. And to me, it's my daily reminder to chase after constantly bettering myself, shutting out the noise of everything around me and showing up as the better version of myself and competing with how I showed up yesterday. Suck less, do better every day.
It is so incredibly hard. I feel it's hard, and I shouldn't talk to myself that way, to shut out all the noise. And I know that is one of the concepts. I'm about halfway through the book, And that is a major, major theme, like shutting out the rest of it so that you can focus on you. So if you don't mind, can you share with our listeners, like, because you have a very interesting story, something bad happened to you. And was that the inspiration for this book?
Well, so, you know, my life has been one of those journeys that you find yourself to feeling more like a pinata. And rather than, you know, kind of walking through and finding out what are the fun things, it was trying to, you know, overcome one difficulty after another, from paralysis, heart failure, a very tough divorce where child abuse was involved, you know, kind of one constant hurdle after another. And so, you know, for me, it's more a matter of, how do you shut out the noise around you? How do you shut out those different difficulties? And then how do you constantly find success despite your circumstances? Exactly. And so for me, it's more a matter of, I'm on a mission to provide and help people identify their purpose and really find hope. And a part of it is really just dealing with some of these major holdbacks that so many people encounter.
So the million-dollar question is, like, how do you do that? Some worlds can be very noisy. My world, I think, is very noisy. Not bad noisy. There's just a lot of things on my plate, and a lot of other people feel the same way. And if you're feeling a little bit stuck, and I'm not even going to say that I suck, although I do love the way you refer to suck as a noun instead of a verb, right? You're like, let's define your suck. So it can be different things for different people. But is that step one, is before you can break through the noise, you have to define your suck?
Well, so defining your suck really comes just in your entire journey. But shutting out the noise really comes down to identifying who you are and what you are built for, and then hyper-focusing on that. Because in your journey, if you're so busy worried about what other people are doing, how they're succeeding, how other people are showing up in their lives, what are the results of their actions, then how can you really keep focused on you? Because if you're comparing yourself to John, well, listen, I'm not John. I'm never going to show up like John. I'm going to show up like Nate. So first, it's really identifying who you are, how you are built to achieve success, and setting your lighthouse, which is your goals. After that, then everybody else's goals doesn't matter anymore. What they do has no bearing on your life and where you're going. It really comes down to only you and your future and the development that you're on.
You have an example, though, in your book, which when I was listening to it in the car, and I like grabbed the steering wheel with both hands going, how the hell did you do this? Where you talk about, and correct me if I get any of these facts wrong, where you were kind of like in a bad spot financially. You had these responsibilities, you were married, you had kids, you had to support, you weren't making what you wanted to be making, and you got an opportunity to take a job that would have solved all those problems, like a six-figure salary. And you thought on it and you were like, yeah, nope. Can you talk to us a little bit about
that? Wow.
Yes, that was a very, very tough moment in my life, because I was faced with what appeared to be the answer to all my problems, the solution to all the pain, during this season where I was on the brinks of losing my house, which, to be honest with you, I did. I ended up having to short sell that house because of how hard that first year of launching, starting, and building a business was. My first year, my first step into entrepreneurship. And this one opportunity was going to literally solve all that problems and give me the opportunity to get back made whole financially. But instead, I had to stay true to who I really was, the passions, the focus, all this dedication. Because if I took the easy road, then that easy road would have left me constantly wanting something else. I would have been unsettled, and I would have never been satisfied with that journey. And so it was just a matter of time before I had to go back into the painstaking process. There is no shortcut through the process to find what you're really built for. You just have to sit in it, grind through it, and really develop yourself within it.
So I have a stupid question, and whoever our past shows, you're going to know that I have a lot of stupid questions. And here's one for you. So using that as an example, right? Like you could have taken this job that would have solved your financial problems and a lot of the problems that go along with the financial difficulty. But you said, I had to stay true to me. And a lot of people So I guess my question is, how did you know what you were staying true to? And I ask that because a lot of people might say, well, my dream is to be an actor, and I'm going to stay true to that. I'm only going to do things that help me be an actor. But when you're sitting there on the balls of your butt and you can't make ends meet, you might say to yourself, well, you know what? Telemarketing is more for me. I'm going to do that. So how do you tell yourself that you know what you know what you know when you are struggling so much trying to get there?
See, that's where there's a major issue that I find across our entire nation as a whole. And that's really where that's one of the problems that I strive to fix, is really working on that process. And I go into that in chapter five a little bit. It's called Hyper Focus on You. But in practicum, it's really understanding that core of who you are, and better yet, understanding the display of what you could become, given your skill sets, your abilities, and your capabilities, setting that trajectory of what is the greater version of you that could actually exist. And so in my life, that was actually when I was a cop. I was a little unsettled during that journey, knowing that I was really built for more. And so I started doing career tests, cognitive tests, personality tests, you name it, to really try to understand me. And through that, and through uncovering really what I could become, that really helped me set this precedence of the direction I needed to travel in, where I needed to go. That's when I started going to school for business. I started working through this process still while I was a cop. Why? Because it was like there's this development of who Nate Green was able to become. And I started to have to move down that path. And then that became that bar of comparison that you start looking at everything through and weigh it against.
It can be so hard, right, for people to stick to it. And one of the things, and I actually am up to your Hyper Focus on You chapter in the book. And I think it's really hard for people to stick to it when you are struggling. You managed to do it, but how do you help people? How do you help people get past that hurdle and stay the course, even when it's such a struggle?
Well, in every area of our life, whether it's physical fitness, whether it's religion, whether it is business or any areas, relationships, very important to have accountability in place. And so different people, whether you're intrinsically motivated or extrinsically motivated, you need to have some form of accountability. I've always been a little bit relentless in my self-accountability, and I don't think anybody could ever push me to the extremes that I push myself. But for those that are more externally focused or extrinsically focused, having the right accountability with the right leaders around you, and that's why we have the programs we have, is to help people really get that roadmap built, and then we have coaching that can help them stay on track. And so that's the biggest thing, is like when you have your doubts, if you let yourself stay in your own headspace, then you're just going to look at what your greatest fear is, like whack-a-mole. You're like dealing with all these feelings rather than facts. And that's where I like to work on focus over feelings, where I set trajectories of where I'm going and I focus on that. And the days that you wake up and you're like, you know what, I'm going to fail. You worry about all these different pieces. You see all the distractions, all the noise. Then those are the days you don't make decisions. You literally say, Nate, no decisions today. You're just going to focus on one step in front of you. You're just going to move the needle just a little bit in one way. You're going to show up consistently today. And that's really where you got to watch out. I mean, we all have those days. It doesn't matter how much success you have, how great you become. You're going to have those days. You look at yourself in the mirror and you're like, well, crap, I don't think I'm good enough today.
Yeah. And the hope is that you don't have too many of those days strung in a row. But you actually just reminded me of something. So two things. And I want to talk to you about the benefits of coaching in a second, because I'm still trying to wrap my head around whether I should get a coach. But set that aside for a minute. You mentioned sometimes you have to utilize facts over feeling. But I want to ask you this, because a lot of the decisions I make in life, I tend to make more on feeling, and they haven't been bad. Some of them maybe have. Like, for example, right now I'm struggling. So I'm selling a building. This is actually a true story. I'm selling a building and I have a realtor. And the realtor came to me the other day and said, you know, I have somebody who wants to make an offer. It's a little less than what you want to sell it for, but I want to talk to you about doing that. And I immediately said to him, I'm glad you called, because not only am I not going to sell it for less, but I actually want to talk to you about increasing the list price. And I have no, listen, there's no reason for me to do it except my gut is telling me to do it. And maybe I'm never going to sell the building now. But so we can't always discount our feelings over facts, right?
Sometimes. I mean, the fastest way to get yourself in the biggest amount of trouble is with feelings. I mean, think about all the marriages that have fallen apart. Either A, it was getting into the marriage that was based upon feelings, or it was the choice to get out. And there's all these statistics on how many people regret getting out of the marriage because they were focused so much on feelings. They felt like getting out. They felt like they weren't going to be able to work together. They felt. Same thing with business. Same thing with so many different things. You're talking about feelings. And so you even go back. Let's just even talk about business principles. I'm sorry, biblical principles. Let's talk about King David. Look at what his feelings led him to do. And so when you're talking about that side, in every different area, you look at some of the biggest mistakes that have happened. It's based upon feelings. And so that's really where you have to have your bar of facts, your bar of, hey, listen, like this might be a great feeling, but how does it pertain to really the direction I'm going in for who I am, the goals that I'm setting in place? And in like your case, that's great. It's great that you might want to raise the price, but what facts substantiate that feelings? Because it's your risk. You can hold on to it, but there's obviously a reason why you had the feeling that you wanted to sell at one point. And so is it that you want to sell or you don't want to sell? Because I think your feelings might be a little contradictory, and it might be that you might say, hey, listen, I'm willing to sell if the juice is worth the squeeze, meaning like if the price is worth it, then I'll sell. If not, I'd rather keep it. And that's great. Those are great feelings. And so each situation, you have to have bearings. But just because you had a feeling that you wanted to raise the price, I don't think it's made because you have knowledge that the building is worth that amount. It's just more a matter of like you would probably rather keep it if it doesn't sell for a certain price. And that's okay.
So back up your feelings with some facts. But I do want to talk to you about something that I really wasn't intending to speak about. But this has been on my mind. You're a coach and you're a successful yep. coach. And we've had several guests on the show who are coaches. We have friends who are coaches. We have a lot of coaches in our lives. I have never once in a single time utilized a coach. And I know a lot of people who do, and they get a tremendous benefit out of it. And I can talk about feelings. I can't figure out why I haven't pulled the trigger and hired a coach. So what would you say to somebody who's interested in hiring a coach? Like, who needs a coach?
I think, in my opinion, everybody needs a coach. It's just more a matter of what type of coach you need. And knowing you and your background in the legal arena, you're a very facts-based person. And so sometimes with coaches, the coach that people like me and you, because I'm a very black and white type person, we don't so much need somebody that is going to get us out of bed in the morning and keep us in our routine, because we're going to stay in our routine because that's what we like. Yeah. We're comfortable inside structure. But maybe the coach that we need is the person that's going to help us break through the limiting lenses that we have, break through some of the mindsets that are holding us back. See, everybody needs a coach. It just depends on what type of coach you need. And that's really where, you know, for me, it's important to have a coach, somebody that pushes you in certain areas or helps pull you out of comfort. And so that's really where I'm sure within a half hour call between me and you, I can identify exactly where you need the coach and why you need that. And then I could help you identify the exact type of coach that's going to be the one that's going to get you across the finish line.
Nate, this is Carol. I have a question for you on that yeah. train of thought. You speak so well. You're very intelligent. I felt like Jonna owes you a nickel, like the peanuts the doctor's in, like you just gave her a little mini session there. Yeah. Highly successful. Somebody's listening right now and they're feeling like they're not reaching their potential. No idea what's holding them back. Not right. clear on what that they want to do. Right. Give me a picture of somebody who would work really well with you that would align with what you're able to help them do. How do they know they need you?
Yeah. One of the things that has really broken me out of the mold from other coaches is found in chapter 2. Your lens is broken. I deal with a lot and I talk a lot about cracked lenses everywhere from childhood to past relationships. These things, it's called cognitive biases. This technical term. We all run through life with these cognitive biases that hold us back in every different way because they create what's called automaticities, like automatic responses. And so when you're talking about that, each one of our lives is filled full of all of these crazy default patterns, default reactions. And so each one of us sit at this point in our lives and we realize it doesn't matter how much success that you've achieved or the lack of success, there's a reason why you're there. And so each person, in my opinion, really should have a coach to really help them identify that one piece. And that's really where, for us, our team, we dive hard into why. I call it the inner two-year-old. Why are you here?
Yeah.
Why are you feeling this way? Why? First, we start tearing people apart from that perspective to go all the way back to childhood to see why they've created this normalization of their habits, of their process. And once you figure that out, then man, the entire world becomes so much more open because you get to reframe the past in this new lens now as an adult. And then you get to start setting the parameters of the lighthouse that you really want to chase, releasing these things from the past. And that's where accountability, right mindsets, walking through, and there's so many foundations. So when people find themselves stuck, that's really where that's our passion is. You're stuck at this level, you know, and you're stuck right in this moment. And you're stuck in whatever this career, whatever this is, versus breaking out into the freedoms in which you're able to live in.
And that is probably the majority of people listening right now. And things happen to us when we're very young. And we always think, oh, we don't have to go back and dig that out. But they imprint on us. And we then form beliefs around those things that happen to us, particularly if they're highly emotionally charged. And then we adapt, or we find a way to protect ourselves or keep ourselves safe in response to that, which was brilliant and perfect at 2 years old, 4 years old, 6 years old. But then the fact of the matter is we grow up and below the surface, those things are still, with the best of intention, driving our behavior, but they're holding us back.
100%.
Tell me that. Am
yeah.
I right?
Yeah, 100%. And think about this. Our parents had cracked lenses, which right. then create our cracked lenses. And an example that in my life, my parents were incredible. So I never want anybody think that my parents were bad. My parents were incredible, but my dad pushed hard into, Nate, you need to get a job with a pension or a retirement system. And so when I told him I was starting my business back in 2008, you know, he told me, Nate, I think you should just go find a job with a pension and a retirement.
Well, yeah.
And if I had listened to that, my entire future would have looked completely different. What I've gone through would look different. The success I've had would look different. I'd be running a job that had pension retirement. Instead, I created pension retirements for other people. I created a process. I've created a business. I created wealth. And so in there, that one thing is just an easy example of how we could very systematically create these tiny adaptations in our future by listening to a constant statement that was pushed in my head from the time that I was around 14 years old all the way through to when I launched my first business.
Yeah, you probably wouldn't have had an eight-figure exit. had to listen to your old dad.
Nor pension.
I totally
not at all. That different world at that point.
I totally get, you know, but he wanted you to play it safe because that's what his lens, you know, probably looked like. And what you said really resonated with me just a second ago, how you help people figure out why they need a coach and what area they need a coach. And I think that's where I've been stuck and holding back. And like I said, I have friends who are really good coaches and I've just never gone there. It's like, I'll just stay right here. But this is actually very, very inspiring. Can you tell us, we do have to wrap up here, but what can you tell us a little bit about your programs that I know on your website, you have one called Built Unstoppable and Focus Your Greatest Asset. Tell us about them.
So Built Unstoppable is one of my favorite projects that we've ever worked on, because this is the culmination of helping people work on three core pillars: the core of who they are, what they're built for, the fuel that is driving them, and then the lighthouse that they're chasing after, and then putting all that into practicum. That's all the first half of the program. The second half of the program, we dial into all their holdbacks, cracked lenses, all the noise that distracts them, what is derailing the progress, and then dialing into the focused action that they need to take to overcome them and find success in their life. That is probably one of my favorite things that we've ever done. And I'm super excited about that because it is incredible. Like, people like you that are in this point, yes, you can do one-on-one coaching from the start, but a lot of times if you jump into the mastermind like that, then that's going to give you such a vast momentum building process that when you come out, then you're going to be more equipped to really know where your holdbacks are. So then that way, when you do get into one-on-one coaching, you are very precise with what you're chasing after.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because that's the other thing. People like me, like, if I do get into a coaching program, I want to be fixed like really instantly, like 5 minutes.
100%. Yep. Yep. You want momentum. And unfortunately, you know, a lot of times there's a lot of coaches that they're what's considered performance coaches, and that's all they do. And what they do is they say, hey, listen, I'm going to inspire you. But what's the saying? You inspire an idiot. Now you just have an inspired idiot. Like, what good is that? I can get on a half hour call with you and I can get you hyped up. You're going to go run through a wall and you're going to go do it well. But the problem is you're going to be stuck in the same rut tomorrow. Versus what we do is we help you fix the core fundamental principles that drive you in the wrong direction or hold you back from chasing after the life that you are able to and called to live.
And you literally walk the walk and talk the talk. So you're the real deal. I wish we didn't have to wrap up, but we do need to wrap up with, we've been speaking with Nate Green, who is an award-winning CEO, entrepreneur, best-selling author of Suck Less, Do Better. Like, how can you not pick that book up? Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, and your coaching programs. And I know that if people want to connect with you, Nate, your main website, successwithnategreen.com?
That is correct.
And they can learn all about your programs there and also follow you on Instagram. I think your Instagram is I am Nate Green. Is that right?
That's correct.
All right, cool. Because that's where I start my stalking mostly is on Instagram.
I like it. Super stalker style.
I didn't have to look at my sheet for that. I memorized it. That's how good a stalker I am. So Success with Nate Green. We've been speaking with author, CEO, all around fabulous guy, Nate Green. Pick up the book, Suck Less, Do Better. Nate, can we have you back like a bunch more times?
Let's do it. I'm all for it. This is great. We could talk for days. We can do live coaching sessions for all I care. Let's go.
Wow, dang. Awesome. Customer number one. Thanks, Nate.
Thanks, Nate.
Thank you, guys.
Yes, thank you very much, Nate. And I know you mentioned earlier that obviously, you know, you feel that John is a big fan of the facts, but also know that she does like her flights of fancy. She's a big fan of Hallmark films. So just keep that in mind, future reference, if you do end up coaching her. Rom-com. She's all about rom-coms. So anyway, we've got segment number three still to come with John Spilborg, Carol Pesci, and some fella, and we'll be right back. So please stick around.
Sunday mornings with 92.9 WBPM means you'll laugh more and stress less. Now here's more Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And we're back one more time here. Jonna Spilborg, Carol Pesci, and myself. Hello, ladies.
Hello, Rankinberry.
Oh, look at that. You guys are good today. So Spilborg, talking to Nate Green there, do you think you might have found your coach?
Perhaps, you know, because here's the other thing. I've been thinking about getting coaching for a long, and I've also thought about coaching in certain areas. And one of the things that holds me back is we do have a couple of friends who are excellent coaches. And I almost don't want to go to a friend because I don't want to talk about my stuff.
Oh, yeah, I get that. Yeah.
Right? Like, if you're going to go to, say, a shrink, you can't go to somebody who knows you. You got to go to somebody who, you know, doesn't know you.
Well, and what I like, and somebody who has run the gamut, somebody who has walked through it all, through the programming of a father who is an amazing father, as he said, but gave him a very specific get a safe job with a pension. And that's not unusual advice, nor is it with bad intention. I can completely understand why parents would give that advice. And then he's a cop for a while. I'm not sure in what order these things happened. Mm-hmm. And then he pushes through, finds his excellence, his way to suck less and do better, and sells a company for, eight figures. So that's the guy you want to listen to, right? He's pushed through limiting programming and pushed himself. And he's sharp, and he sounds like he's really enjoying what he's doing.
And that's probably also key. You know, we could talk, maybe we're going to have a guest on who's going to talk about literally, you know, do what you love and the money will follow.
Yeah.
I don't think people really believe that. I want to talk to somebody who has actually done that.
I don't know. I love sitting on the couch in a blue jeans and t-shirt with a dog on my lap.
I would love that too. And I think if you get into his book and you get to the point that literally it like was giving me It was giving me anxiety when he was talking about how broke he was and he had an opportunity to take a six-figure job and get out, like pull up immediately. And he thought about it and said,
didn't
no.
Do it.
And then when you learn that he sold a company for eight figures, you're like, dang, that was ballsy. And like, a lot of people, you know, they're too afraid to do that. And I understand that too.
So yeah.
He could probably coach us out of that. But I guess right now we got to coach ourselves out of this show.
Yep.
That's right. That's right. And you know, one thing I don't have to concern myself with
is
being too scared to turn down that six-figure job and do something else. So anyway, thank you very much there, Nate Green, for joining us today. Much appreciated. And for Jonas Billboard and Carol Pesci, I am the Frankenberry, and we will be back again next week right here with more from Happy Hour. So please join us again then.
You've been listening to Happy Hour with Jonas Billboard and Carol Pesci. If you missed last weekend's show or want to hear it again, visit the Happy Hour page at 92.9WBPM.com. There's more life advice, real conversation, and another awesome interview next Sunday morning at 8 a.m. Live better, stress less, and laugh more with Happy Hour on 92.9 WBPM.